Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? Welcome to the Around the World podcast. I'm your host, Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more in the Around the World podcast. Hey everyone, I just got done with my conversation with Cade Mascarella. He and his wife Stacy live here in Beijing, China, and they have two young daughters. Before they had kids, they traveled extensively together and lived in many countries around the world, and we talked a lot about that for this podcast. But the focus of this podcast is on travel with kids. After Cade and his wife had children, they decided to continue the adventure and keep taking them to exotic places abroad. And Cade has a lot of great sage travel advice to all of you parents out there who wish you could take your kids abroad or maybe are afraid to do so. Let's jump right into my conversation with Cade Mascarella. Hey, Cade.
Hey, Dan.
Thanks for coming on.
Oh, sure, no problem.
It's a Sunday afternoon today, so I'm glad you were able to take some time to come out and into the city.
Thanks for having me over.
Yeah, I know you live out in the suburbs and
I do.
It's kind of a long distance. Suburbs of Beijing, I should say. I live now in central Beijing. And
yes.
Last year I lived out there at the school where you guys work. And that, there were some good things. There were some definite bad things.
I bought a car a few years ago, so it does help.
Oh, yeah. How long have you been in China?
This is my 8th year in China.
8 years?
Uh-huh.
It's a pretty long time, more than most people I know who have even been, like who I would consider to be kind of almost lifelong China people.
Mm-hmm. My own failure in that regard is I have not studied the language and culture as probably someone who's been here 8 years should.
Oh, do you speak the language at all?
I do, a little bit. I mean, survival skills. I can do bank and taxis and restaurants and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay.
My literacy is pretty poor. My wife's literacy is much better.
Literacy being the characters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But both my kids can speak Chinese. The older one probably knows close to 500 characters.
That is so nice. So can you use her as a translator then?
It's only been probably the last 6 months to a year that she's understood the concept of translation.
How old is she?
Where she's 5, almost 6.
Okay.
Her birthday's in June. So it's odd because like she knows she has a good vocabulary in both English and Chinese, but it's only like I said, it's only probably been the last 6 months where you could say what is X in English or what is this in Chinese, and she would understand the concept of translation.
So early on,
before she would speak. If you spoke Chinese to her, she would speak Chinese back to you. If you spoke English to her, she would speak English back to you. But there wasn't a lot of back and forth between the two languages.
Ah, okay.
And now that's happening now.
Oh, that's interesting how it works.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. I have vague memories of being a kid and thinking there were only three languages. There was English, Spanish, and regular.
And regular.
And I spoke regular. I didn't even know that I spoke English. I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
And eventually, I must have just figured out, probably around that age, that, like, yeah, there's all these languages.
You live in a Star Trek universe, everybody speaks English?
Yeah, that's like the regular language, and if you want to go off, speak something else, with just your friends, no one else can understand, then you speak English. It's strange how that works, but, yeah, it's a little harder as an adult, I guess, to take time to study and pick it up. Yeah, and it's a difficult language, obviously, Chinese.
Yes. I was actually surprised. I mean, everyone talks about it being such a difficult language, but I find the spoken aspects, the oral part, to not be that bad, because there are so many people that Mandarin is not their actual first language, even though they are a native Chinese person and they're from, you know, down the road or whatever. It's their home, their village language is their first language kind of thing. And so, like, particularly if you go, Stacey and I really like traveling out side of northern China, because people, a lot of the people, Mandarin is not their, they learned it in school, and so yep. they speak slower and they're easier to understand.
Yeah, there is that aspect.
It's
funny, like, walking around Beijing, some, like, I'll sometimes hear people talking to each other, and I don't understand anything they're saying, and I'm like, what's going on? I get frustrated because I don't, like, I don't know Chinese.
Oh, yeah.
And then I go, oh, wait a minute, they're speaking some dialect.
Yeah.
That must be why.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not from here.
Yeah.
And then traveling elsewhere, I agree, it can be clear.
Yeah.
And I guess one of the biggest compliments that I got recently with my Chinese was somebody asked me if I learned Chinese in Beijing. Because they heard me speaking.
They heard your accent.
Yeah, they heard my Beijing accent.
You sound like a pirate?
Yeah, like, arr. Yeah, it's pretty cool to have these kind of little breakthroughs happen. Yeah, and I'll agree, there are things that are pretty easy about Chinese, actually, like the...
I love the way that the words are built.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like dian nao, or... like electric brain for a computer.
Yeah,
like these are, that's fascinating to me.
Yeah,
and I also like the fact that unlike Korean or Japanese, other places I've spent a little time, they made their own words. They didn't phoneticize computer to follow that same example.
Oh, and so in Korean they say
it's
computer.
Computer, yeah, it's
phoneticized. Okay.
And same in Japanese, it's they use the. They use their characters to phonetically make that word.
Yeah, there is some of that in Chinese. Like coffee is just cafe, but not much. You're right.
No. Generally, they make up their own thing.
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
I like. I think that's cool.
It is. It kind of retains the culture a little bit better. And I think French they like to do that too, don't they? They don't like it when
my daughter's studying French. Yeah, I'm trying.
Yeah.
My daughter's. Hopefully going to be a great person. She grows up being multilingual, but right now she's doing a great job because she's young. We'll see when she gets older if she has any kickback, fight against it. But she's learning French right now. I do not know any French at all. Neither does my wife. So it's been interesting.
Oh, so she can make fun of you or whatever, talk
she,
about you.
Well, right now she's at the stage where she is... gaining just vocabulary and early decoding skills in French. So she can start reading things, and then she also can start naming things in the world in French, the vocabulary, and she thinks it's funny that Stacey and I do not know what that is, you know?
Yeah.
And she thinks it's hilarious. But
that's, well, as a kid, like, you think adults just know everything.
And, yeah, that's pretty much what it is. She's like, wait, you don't know that? Why not?
Yeah, there's something you don't understand?
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's gotta be a tough one to admit.
Yeah.
And I guess that probably doesn't usually go away until they're much older, right? Like, that idea that their parents know everything.
Yeah.
And she's losing that at a young
pretty
age.
Probably earlier than most kids.
Yeah.
Where she's
it's
like,
traumatic.
Oh, you're a person. You're a...
Yeah.
You're
a big
not,
me.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh, yeah. So you have two daughters, right?
Yes, Taliesin and Peregrine.
And I guess I've never asked you, is Taliesin, is that from...
it's Welsh.
It's Welsh.
Yeah, it's... Okay. So we didn't want to know the gender... But we wanted names that could go either way.
Okay.
Was the original thought behind that.
So you just came up with unique names and...
Names that could be ambiguous.
Yeah.
In like, oh, that could be a boy's name, that could be a girl's name.
That's cool.
What we didn't realize, though, after we chose these names, is they both are historically male names.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And we didn't have that realization until later.
I think that has happened a fair amount. Have you ever read Freakonomics?
I have.
I think there was one chapter, I think it was the first one, where he talked about names.
how things go back and forth.
Yeah, yeah. And especially from female to male, like, the, for example, the name Leslie used to be a boy's name, and now it's a girl's name.
Well, Stacy as well.
And Stacy, yeah, absolutely. And it, it usually doesn't go back the other direction.
Yeah, that's interesting that, it, that once it crosses over into a certain gender, it doesn't go back.
Right.
Maybe 100 years before it goes back.
It could be, yeah. And then there's other names like Brittany that used to be a very classy name that wealthy people name their daughters, and after Britney Spears, it's like it's largely based on how much money you have, how athletic you are.
Yes,
it's, yeah, that's another interesting one.
That's fun. Well, being from the South in the United States, everybody, bad names are not a shock to me.
Yeah, what was other? Oh, misspelled Michael was another big one.
Yeah,
like the they get the CH backwards.
Yeah.
On the birth certificate or something, just go with it. That's a fairly common thing to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I mean, that can be a whole another conversation about the craziness of spelling in the English language.
Ah, sure. That I guess you don't run into in Chinese. You don't have to spell anything.
No. Yeah. I met a person who was quite fascinating. A woman that I worked with my first year in China. Her father, I want to say they were from Michigan, and he was a university professor studying dyslexia, and he was studying dyslexia in Chinese students, because it's a whole different writing system and a way of learning writing. It's mainly memorization-based, you know, to read the reading and writing as opposed to... what happens in English. And he's a really fascinating guy and really fascinating study. He was working on it for like 10 years or something.
Yeah, I heard I also heard this podcast recently where they're talking about the tones in Chinese and how that makes you better at music, maybe. And people have been studying this recently, and
I could see that,
like, where they would
a broader ear or something, a broader
Where you can hear you can hear music better or have a better idea. And They would talk to someone one day and ask them to say a word, and then come back the next day and ask them to say the same word, and compare the two recordings, and they're identical every single time. They always say it exactly the same, and this, if it's the same word. And in English, obviously, we don't do that. We have all sorts of different inflections. So, yeah, that was fascinating to me, and it was they're talking about how we maybe have a slight disadvantage just by the language that we're born into in certain areas.
I've also read a opposite thing. This was in Vietnamese, because they have more tones. I think they have like 8 tones or something.
Wow.
But there was a guy teaching... he was teaching Vietnamese to foreigners, to non-Vietnamese speakers. And he was like, English has all the tones. You just have to find... Like, you can make all the same tones.
Yeah.
You just have to find... the proper word or the proper phrasing that elicits that tone.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe when you're asking a question, you might go up in a certain way on a certain word, and that might be the tone you need to speak Vietnamese more clearly or more have better pronunciation or whatever.
Okay.
And so he was trying to decode that. He was trying to find out how can I show someone if they say, you know, barn like that's the same tone you need to say all these words in Vietnamese kind of thing. That you did have it in English, as opposed to other languages where you didn't have those sounds.
Where that inflection might not exist.
Okay.
I could see that maybe in, like, I speak Spanish too, and where it's more machine gun paste of a language, and I don't think they put as many inflections on things, but yeah, in English we certainly do.
Yeah.
Just me studying Chinese, there's 4 tones, and for those who don't know, and I just kind of naturally did what you're just describing.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, second tone, it's just like you're asking a question. Okay. Like, your voice goes up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Fourth tone, it's like you're yelling at somebody, like, stop that!
Mm-hmm.
And third tone
So basically he was trying to do something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Makes total sense.
And I honestly don't know how many tones are in Vietnamese, but there's more than 4.
Right. That must be much more difficult. Although the written language is easier. but they just have...
It's the Portuguese, based on Latin script.
Yeah, right? Latin script with some...
You could write down a street address. Stacy and I lived there many years ago as well.
Oh, yeah?
And you could write down a street address much more easily than you can in China, because you just copy the
Latin script. Yeah. Right, right. That's a whole other challenge in China, is like getting the addresses right.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest things about living here, just finding anything. But you've mentioned a few other countries. I'm interested in this kind of timeline here. You've mentioned Japan, Korea.
So Stacy and I have been together probably 13 years.
Okay.
My wife is from Illinois. She's also a teacher.
Where are you from?
Mississippi originally.
Mississippi.
But I haven't lived there in a long, long time.
Okay. So, and you're both teachers?
We're both teachers, yeah. We met in South Korea.
Okay.
We took a year off after we met and traveled, did kind of an around-the-world year-off trip. And that's where we went to, that's how we went to a lot of places, you know, backpacking kind of thing. And then... We started working we did volunteer work with refugees from Burma, from Myanmar, in Thailand for about 6 months, and did some traveling around Southeast Asia during that time as well. And then we went, and before I met her, I worked in Japan. Before I met Stacy, my first job outside of the United States was in Japan. Hmm. And then after Thailand, after doing volunteer work in Thailand, we went to Vietnam. Then after we went to Vietnam, we went back to South Korea to the job that we met at.
Oh, back to the same job?
Yeah, same company.
Oh, they just gave you like a sabbatical kind of thing?
No. We'd finished our contracts and left. And then they were opening a new campus. And we were randomly looking for jobs after we had finished in Vietnam, and we were looking for jobs, and we saw that, and so we called the guy we knew there and was like, hey, are you hiring again? And he was like, yes, come on, you don't even have to interview, you just get on a plane kind of thing, because he knew us. And so that was easy, and then we did that for a while, and then we went to, oh Christ, where did we go after that? Central America,
okay.
Costa Rica, worked a little bit in Costa Rica, did a lot of hanging out as well.
What did you work on?
Editing English stuff. I actually, the job that I, because Stacy speaks Spanish, I'm horrible with languages, but Stacy speaks Spanish pretty well, so that was not a problem. But I had a job on this was in the early years of streaming television and things like that, just getting off the ground. So I was writing blog entries for a company that wanted to document or talk about streaming TV and that kind of stuff.
Okay. Streaming TV, you mean like YouTube or you mean live?
Yeah, television? this was just like right at the beginning of that kind of stuff being really popular.
Yeah, okay.
When it was just breaking out. So like YouTube and things like that. And also subscription services and things like that was just starting.
Uh-huh.
And so I did that while I was there. So I just wrote 500 words every couple days about streaming TV and went and sat on a beach. So it was pretty, good. Yeah, it was pretty good. It wasn't a lot of money, but it was enough to pay our rent. And, you know, it was enough to pay our rent in Costa Rica, which was, you know.
It's not the cheapest country.
No. It was okay. And then Stacy was doing other stuff. She was doing editing of English papers and teaching a little English. So we were okay. We weren't full on serious during our time there. We were kind of hanging out. Then we traveled around Central America, and then after that, we might have gotten the timeline messed up. We might have gone to Central America after Vietnam, and then went back to South Korea after Central America.
Hmm.
Because we went from Central America to Haiti. I mean, we went from South Korea to Haiti.
Okay. What did you do in Haiti?
Worked at the American school in Port-au-Prince.
Is this before the earthquake or after?
This was a year before.
Oh, okay.
No. maybe 2 years before.
But it was definitely before.
Definitely before.
Yeah, okay.
Haiti was... that's a whole nother hour. We could do a Haiti show some other time.
Let's do that. I'll make a note. We'll do that.
I still have good friends that married Haitians or still have connections to the country, and another couple that actually they're working in China now. He's a principal at a school in Nanjing. Actually, they adopted a Haitian child after teaching there.
Wow.
Some coworkers. So I'm still kind of. Surprisingly, because it's not really what I do, I've stayed in touch with the people I worked with in Haiti, which a lot of the other countries I've bounced around, I've really kind of lost touch with the people, my coworkers.
Yeah, it's so easy to lose touch.
So that's interesting that I'm still in touch with those guys.
Yeah, which, it must have been good connections.
Yeah, it was. I think it was the adversity of the place that kind of made a good.
I imagine.
Good connection.
I can only think about how.
And then after Haiti, we came here.
To China. Where did you live in China? Like, we're
just here. Beijing. I've lived within a 10-minute walk of the house that I'm currently in for the last 8 years.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I had this idea you moved around a bit.
Nope.
Because
you traveled a lot in China.
Oh, okay.
We travel a lot in China. I did some work. I did some IELTS testing. And
What's that mean?
It's the British equivalent of the TOEFL. It's like a test you take. Oh. It's an English exam in order to get into universities and things like that in foreign countries. I did some testing, and they send you out to cities all over China to do testing to college students and stuff like that. Okay. And then Stacy and I have done some vacation type stuff in China as well.
Yeah. But so you had your kids after you came to China?
Both my kids were born in China.
They were
born in Beijing.
Uh-huh. Okay. And getting a passport for them, American passports,
no problem. It's a breeze. It's very easy.
You don't have to, like, go to the embassy to give birth or something?
No. You take their birth certificate. Which is issued by the Chinese hospital. It's all in English and Chinese, so it's not a language issue. You take that to the embassy. The embassy issues a foreign birth abroad certificate, or a citizen born abroad certificate. Some sort of a certificate that says, yes, this is a valid... The U.S. embassy is recognizing this as a valid birth of an American citizen abroad.
Okay.
And that's it. That counts as a legal American birth certificate.
Oh. And they got a passport right away then, too?
Yeah.
I just remember a couple of years ago, I forget his name, there was a baseball pitcher on the Brewers, the team that was from Milwaukee, where I'm from. Mm-hmm. He's from Canada, and he had a newborn baby, and they were just driving to the States to, like, play baseball. Or it might have been the other direction. Mm-hmm. Couldn't get through, because the baby didn't have a passport. And he went, what? I didn't know a baby needs a passport. Like,
yeah, when you're crossing borders.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. So I guess your daughters would have to get them right away.
Yeah. Like you have, like, very little time, actually. You have, it's a matter of weeks that they need, because they need the visa as well.
Oh, and, right. Yeah, they need a Chinese visa.
They need a Chinese visa.
Ah,
and so you have a matter of weeks after the birth to get all that stuff in a legally, you know, done kind of thing.
Another funny thing is, like, I remember I was at the airport here in China once, and this, not you guys, but a couple was, like, in front of me, a foreign couple, and they had their baby and, like, a passport for the baby, and I just remember seeing the picture of the passport. It's like, it's a baby.
Yeah.
And so the guy is, like, looking at the baby picture and comparing it with the baby.
And it's difficult because the American passports last 5 years.
Oh, God.
So, like, my youngest daughter's 3 now. So her passport picture is literally you know, a week after her birth kind of thing.
So it could be anyone.
Yeah. So it's very difficult now. Actually, when we went to Russia, they did a whole... Because Russia had... I didn't know this until later, looking it up, but Russia has a whole thing where, like... they have agreements with lots of other countries about, like, if they're parents traveling with children, you need to double-check everything so, you know, they're not, you know, a divorced couple, somebody's not taking the kid going back to Russia or something like that, or traveling to America or whatever.
Yeah.
I think the States, Canada, Germany, Russia have all this. They've signed an agreement where, like, you know, they're very strict at border crossings with people with children. And Stacy and I don't have the same last name, even though we're married and have been married for several years. She didn't take my name, and the kids have her last name. And so, I got the double check at the Russian border crossing. With going through with the kids, because we usually when we go through border crossings, we each take a kid because it's just easier.
Oh yeah,
I take two passports and a kid and go through, and my wife takes two passports and the other kid and goes through. It just makes it more, faster.
Yeah, yeah,
expedite kind of thing. But I got the kid got the twice over because the picture was from when they were a baby, and then I got the twice over because my name was not the same as hers. So.
Huh. But they let you through eventually.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was more a matter of minutes added to the inspection rather than anything.
Yeah, that's not too bad then.
No.
Yeah, I guess so. Transitioning from that, one of the main reasons that one of the main things we wanted to talk about before that we talked about before we started recording was traveling with kids.
Right.
Since I don't have kids, and I hear a lot of people talk about how difficult it must be to travel with kids, and it's a really common thing to hear. Like, I'd love to travel, but I guess the two big ones I hear are, I'd love to travel, but I don't have the money, and I love to travel, but I have kids. Or I don't have the time. Those, I guess, three big ones. And I can.
Well, that's the irony, isn't it? When you have the time, you don't have the money, and when you have the money, you don't have the time.
You usually get one or the other. Yeah.
The kids thing, though. I mean, as we were talking about before we started recording, the kids thing was more a decision that my wife and I made, where we did not want to have that excuse. We didn't want that to be we'd love to do this, but. We got two little kids.
Yeah.
We didn't want that to keep us from doing the things we'd done before we had kids. And in fact, we think that traveling and exposing children to different people and different cultures and different things is important.
Absolutely.
So that was important to us.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's obviously opened my mind.
And it wasn't an overnight thing. I mean, like, before we had kids, we traveled, just get up, grab a backpack, sleeping bag, and go, kind of thing. There is a lot more planning involved when you have kids, especially little kids. I mean, we took our oldest when she was 2.5, 3 years old. We took her on a tour to North Korea. And that was just something we wanted to do, and we asked the tour agency, can we bring a child? And they're like, how old? And we said, and they're like, yeah, that should be fine. But the issue there was she was still drinking milk. She'd been weaned off breast milk, but she was still drinking like a lot of milk.
Okay, yeah.
And refrigeration was an issue.
That could be an issue. Yeah.
So like those kind of things you have to just... You gotta prep, basically. You gotta prepare.
Uh-huh.
And that's... so it shouldn't stop you, but there's a crap load of things that you have to consider before you jump on that plane, as opposed to when you're two single people, you go to the airport, get a ticket, and go.
Just go.
There's some planning. There is some planning involved with kids, but it shouldn't stop you.
Yeah.
And I'm not judging, but it does kind of irritate me when people use their children to say, I can't do this or I can't do that.
Yeah, yeah. And you've got a perfect comeback to that, right?
Like, I live in China. I live in Beijing.
I don't exactly have that comeback.
I go anywhere I want,
Yeah.
But the blue passport helps a lot.
The American passport.
It does help a lot.
Yeah, a list just came out of, top 10 passports for how many countries you can get into, what are the best passports have. The U.S. used to be number one.
It's Germany, yeah?
Yeah, I think it's Germany now. Yeah. We're still, really up there. We're, number five.
Well, it's all the reciprocal agreements you make with other countries. Yeah, yeah. So, even China, for example, now has the multi-entry, year-long tourist visa.
Yeah, even China's opened up a little bit.
No, I mean, that's a reciprocal agreement that America's made.
Chinese can get that in the U.S.?
I believe so. They can get now a some sort of same kind of thing, family visitation kind of visas that are longer
periods of time that are valid for longer periods of time.
Yeah, my mom came visit me last year. She got 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Just in one go. Yeah. I mean, not all at once. She can stay for, I think,
30 days or 60 days or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe 90. It might even
be 90. Yeah, yeah. But she can use that visa for 10 years.
It's valid for that long.
Yeah. So she can come back again. Just has to buy a plane ticket. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's pretty easy there. You were telling me a couple of stories, though, before, about before you had kids, even.
Before I had kids, yeah. One of the things that, incidences stick in your head, you know, and then later when you have kids, you're like, wait a minute. You know, I remember that. There was one time in Ecuador, Stacy and I were hiking up a extinct volcano. And we were, you know, young in our 20s and, you know, backpacking, doing the same thing that a lot of people do, you know, when they're that age and going around. And we were, I don't know if we were out of shape or what, but, like, you know, we kept stopping to take a break. And there was a family a little ways behind us that ended up passing us. And it was, they had... children with them, probably seven and nine year old children with them, a girl and a boy, and they were hiking up the mountain.
And they walked right past you.
Oh, they smoked us. Like, they were at the top, because at the top was like a little crater that had a little, you know, little lake, and they were at the top playing in the water by the time we got there. So they must have been there at least 20-30 minutes before we got to the top.
God, so. It's so demoralizing.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just, like, it's one of those things that sticks in my head that I'm like, well, you know.
Yeah, like, maybe we can do this.
Yeah,
that's cool. Leading by example kind of thing.
Yeah. And then there was a similar incident.
Hello.
Incident? Is that a word? Instance? There was a similar instance.
We'll go with instance.
In Cambodia at Angkor Wat, where there was a French family, and they had... three or four kids, all quite young, under six. The father was even carrying one on a backpack, and they were just climbing all over the temples, climbing all over the rocks. It was just and it looked like the kids were having so much fun.
God,
and they were exactly.
I was there a year ago, man. That's fun as an adult.
Exactly.
That is like a playground.
And it's not like
kids.
It's not like you can break things. I mean, they're big chunks of rocks. Like, five-year-old's not actually going to break anything.
It'd break your skull, maybe.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, but not actually damage the rocks or anything, so...
Nah.
And those two things stuck in my head when I eventually had my own children.
Uh-huh.
And we're thinking about traveling, and I was like, well, actually, no, I have seen people do the things that I want to do. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I've even seen a few families that went on backpacking. They stay in hostels with all the young kids who are backpacking, and that happens sometimes. And
yeah, we've stayed in hostels with our kids. Particularly, I mean, in Europe, it's a breeze. A lot of times, they even have family rooms in the hostels. Eastern and Western Europe, it's much easier than a lot of other places because they do have kind of an assumption that there are families traveling, where a lot of other countries maybe don't have that assumption.
Yeah,
or a lot of other regions, not of the world.
Attitudes can be very different about kids depending on where you are. Mm-hmm. I think. Before we move on to anything else, you mentioned North Korea, and I think I just kind of realized it. Like, as soon as you say those two words, there's like people are probably anyone listening to this is going to have like 1,000 questions. We should talk about that for a little bit.
Well, you've been as well.
I was just there recently, like a month ago, and we're recording this in what month is it? March 2016, and
yes.
there's been a lot of tensions there in the last 3 months. There's been. If you follow the news at all, you've seen it, and
there was the conviction.
The conviction. This guy, who was a tourist there, got caught trying to steal a sign, I guess it is, and from the hotel, and just got sentenced to 15 years hard labor.
Yeah.
So we'll see how long he actually stays, but that's rough, and. He went with the same company that I went with on the tour before me. And so, like, I mean, we were just, like, reading the news one day when we heard about his arrest. And we're like, he was in North Korea, huh? And he got arrested. And, like, we're going to North Korea. And then he went with Young Pioneer Tours. Oh, we're going with Young Pioneer Tours. Uh-oh. But it was totally fine for us. I mean, the guy, this, I don't want to get too much into it, but the guy was stealing.
He did, I mean, he did
something, right?
He did break the law, and there are certain countries that your foreignness, for lack of a better word, is not going to help you. It's going to hurt you.
Yeah.
When you break the law. When you break countries. The law. Yeah. And he did break the law, no matter how silly or minor an infraction it seems to people outside of North Korea, they took it seriously.
Yeah, very seriously. Yeah. And punished accordingly. And I don't think it's a fair punishment, but you're exactly right. And to my knowledge, I don't think any foreign tourist who has gone there with an organized tour has ever been arrested unless they've done something illegal.
I honestly don't know. Yeah.
And the other incidents that I've read about, it is incidents. Yeah. That I've read about, have all involved something that was easily avoidable. Yeah. And so I never felt in any danger. Katie and I just followed the rules and we were totally fine. Everybody was fine. No problem. And it's a little frustrating for me. Like whenever I read about, this particular story, or anything about some guy getting arrested in North Korea, if you read the comments, which mistake number one, right? Reading the comments in an article, just read them, and they're all just like, this guy is such an idiot for going to North Korea, and like everyone thinks that. It's like, you guys, he stole something. Like,
right?
He's not an idiot for going there. He's an idiot for breaking the law while he's there.
Right?
You know. So I think if you are thinking about going there, I still think it is probably fine. You should check on whatever tour company you're going with, get some up-to-date advice
from
them.
Right.
Things do change, but for now, you'll very likely be totally fine. Just follow the rules.
Well, you and I are in a unique position. I mean, I think all the tours fly out of Beijing or originate out of China. So the
vast majority.
Yeah. So we're it's not as daunting a trip for us as it is for a lot of people.
No. And actually, on my tour, it was a big group. It was 25 of us.
Yeah,
and
my tour as well. It was. Okay. And this was several years ago. So.
Okay. And ours was, out of the 25, probably 20 of them lived in China already. But maybe it's because
our group was a little less. I would say that it was more like 10 people lived in China out of the 20 or 30.
I should say that we went over Chinese New Year, and that's kind of when a lot of foreigners want to just get away from the crowds in China.
And have the time.
And everyone has time off, right? Yeah. So in a time that's not a Chinese holiday, you might have a lot less people who live in China.
That would be a... most of the people on the trip that I took were tourists that had come with that express purpose. They were doing other traveling in Asia or China, but part of the purpose for traveling was the North Korea trip.
Yeah.
So that was a thing. So.
Yeah, I think a lot of people want to go. They have an idea of visiting every country in the world or every country in whatever
that'd be awesome,
whatever region they're traveling to. Yeah, that'd be cool. But, you know, if you're traveling through Asia and you miss a country or two and you later in life you're like, I've been to every country. Oh, except this one.
Yeah.
Crap. Now I have to plan a special trip just to go there. Yeah. It's kind of cool to cover them all.
Well, I'm fortunate. I think that I'm very fortunate because I have been to... I went to Cuba before... they started their,
opening it up,
yeah. And then, you know, I've been to North Korea. I went to North Korea before Kim Jong-un took power. I went to North Korea before the passing of his father.
Okay, so what year was it?
So all I know is the deaths of people to place it in time. It was right around the time that Gaddafi just died.
Ah, okay.
Because I had a long conversation with one of the guides about how Libya was such a good friend of North Korea and how this was a horrible thing and we should go to the museum and see all the gifts that Gaddafi gave Kim Il-sung, Kim Sung-il?
Kim Jong-il is Kim Jong-il, the second one, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And they even, I read absolutely forbid any news from the Arab Spring to enter North Korea during
No, the people I talked about, people I talked to did not know and were quite shocked.
They didn't realize that,
that Gaddafi had died, that there had been a revolution of any sort or anything.
And yeah.
They didn't seem... the conversation was not something that seemed taboo or banned or anything like that. Like, we had a long conversation about it, and they didn't seem worried about having this conversation.
Okay.
And I used that as a guide because there were other things that we broached, other topics that we broached, and they were like, yeah, whatever. And, you know, didn't pursue it. Where this, they pursued it and didn't seem worried about talking about it. So,
okay. Was another one that my perception of the country before I went really... I mean, you just have to go there to
well, then you understand that it is much more of a cult than a functioning... It's not a government, it's a cult. It's a cult that has a country.
Yeah, it does feel like that.
And I think once you understand that, you do get a better understanding of their reactions to things and their interactions with other countries. That they're not playing by the same rules as other countries because they're their own thing.
It's their own thing, absolutely. It's their own thing. And I guess what I was getting at, though, is, like, when I went there, I was... my first day, I was super tense. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to look the wrong way. And then by the last day, I was totally relaxed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the subjects that I would never have even brought up on my first day were, I'm like, oh, yeah, actually, I can ask my guide this. This is no problem.
Mm-hmm. By the and they'll give day. You an answer, yeah.
Yeah, and the answer might not be anything thorough or what you want to hear, but they'll at least say something. They're not going to, like... You won't get arrested for, like, asking a question.
And also taking pictures. I was led to believe that it was before going, that, you know, there'd be so much that you couldn't take a picture of, or so much you couldn't look at. And I found that, no, there were a lot of things were open. But to get back to the topic of children and traveling, just because there was this one incident in North Korea that I thought was really cool. I found traveling with a small child in a place like that made it a lot easier.
Okay, and you had one kid at the time?
I had just Peregrine.
Or one and a half?
Just the one. Stacey wasn't even pregnant, I don't think.
Oh, she wasn't pregnant. Okay.
I want to say that it was the last time before we had the two.
Okay.
The last big trip we took before we had the two. But yeah, the traveling with a small child in such a place did make people more inviting. Did drop a lot of barriers right when you walked in the door, which I thought was kind of cool. In such a place,
yeah,
you know, yeah. We were at the one story that I want to tell is that we were at the DMZ, mm-hmm. and there was you've been, so you know how it's set up. They have the big room there.
The building at the border?
The building at the border.
Right.
Well, not the one that's actually at the border. Not the conference room, but like the big tourist center
building. Oh, the one where they signed
where you go up and look.
Yeah, the ceasefire.
And you can look across to the other side. And it has the balcony and everything.
Yeah, maybe I'll put some pictures up on my website for people to look at.
So people know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a building, just to describe it, there's a big building that you can look for if you're in North Korea.
You can look over the border.
Yeah, look over the border to South Korea. And there's a similar building facing the north.
Yes.
And the South Korean side has, like, 500 video cameras on it.
Yes.
So you know they're watching.
Yes.
But the soldiers from both sides take turns manning that zone.
Yes.
So when we were both there, there were only North Korean soldiers there. And you can go to the same place on the South Korean side as well.
Yes.
And I haven't been yet, but... Yes. Then there's only, obviously, South Korean soldiers.
Yeah.
But go on.
So we were at that building with the soldiers, the large building, and the head military guy, a very, very short man in a very fancy uniform, who was the head of the DMZ for North Korean soldiers. So he was the head of the soldiers.
Yeah.
He just happened to be walking through the building with, like, a whole entourage of people, and he saw me taking pictures with my child, with a small, you know, she was like 2 years old or less, with this small child. And he just, like, stopped and came over to us and, like, started talking to us. And it was his birthday that day. And wow. So my little child sang happy birthday to, like, this North Korean military guy.
Oh, that's cool.
At the DMZ. And, yeah. like, he thought it was great. And we took pictures together and everything. And it was very... very humanizing.
Yeah.
For someone who, by all intents and purposes, was probably a very, very scary individual.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not negating that part of it. Yeah. I'm just saying that those interactions were surprising, and I think were because we had a child, as opposed to, you know, just being a bunch of tourists standing around, he probably wouldn't have stopped or come over to us and talked to us.
Okay. So that kind of lets his guard down,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
A little bit. Wow. Yeah. Even a North Korean guard at the border.
Yeah. But, like, that was what it was. And, like, he had a whole bunch of, like, very scary soldiers with him that also, you know, kind of, like, were taking pictures and things of us and with us, you know.
Yeah.
So those kind of things, I think... you know, when people say, oh, I can't do it because I have children, I think you're missing out on some doors that it opens. I mean, yes, there are people that don't like kids when you travel, that, you know, you have some pushback when you stay in certain hotels and that kind of thing because you have kids. That's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, it also opens up some opportunities for some amazing experiences.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, when our group was there at the same spot, we took one group photo with one soldier, and it wasn't like a head guy by any means.
Yeah.
And I don't think he even really said anything to us. It was like, hey guys, here's where you can take a photo with the soldier.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, this is just for tourists. You know, it felt fake.
Yeah.
That part of it, not the whole trip, but that part of it did. But yeah, sounds like you had a much more genuine interaction with those guys. What about China? What's it like to travel with kids in China?
Good and bad.
Yeah.
Good and bad. I mean, I think that my kids have the advantage of growing up here, so they speak Chinese.
Mm.
My older daughter speaks Chinese probably pretty damn close to what a native kid her same age would speak.
Okay, that's cool.
I mean, yeah, she's really close to completely fluent in Chinese.
Uh-huh.
So I think that is an advantage that my kids have to other foreign children, because there is a lot of touching of the hair, picking you up and hugging, taking random photos
in
public
places.
We should
explain this a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can give a brief background.
Like, for Americans, if you've never been to China, or anyone who's ever been here, China is, what's it called, homogenous? Is that the right word?
Yes,
it's
very much so.
I think it's like 93% of the country is Han, Chinese, and then almost everyone else is also Chinese. They're just a
different kind of Chinese.
Yeah, ethnic minority of Chinese. But there are not many foreign people here when you consider how many people are in China. I mean,
particularly if you travel outside of a major city.
Yes,
and you go on vacations in China. Yeah.
Yeah, even in Beijing, like 2 hours ago, my girlfriend and I were eating lunch in a hutong, and it's kind of like the first warm weekend we've had. It's spring is here.
Yeah.
It feels good.
Yay!
So we deliberately found a restaurant where we could eat outside,
because
it's just so nice to sit outside and eat lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were eating, a ton of people who were walking past us were staring, like, pretty hard.
Well, you're
and that's
Katie,
in Beijing, like middle.
Well, Katie has the blonde hair, blue eyes that are that's gonna make people stop and take a double take, you know.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
Even in a place where it like Beijing, and even the neighborhood you live in, which does have probably a higher percentage of foreigners than other parts of Beijing.
Yeah, much higher. Yeah. There are thousands of foreigners in Beijing, but there's like 25 million Chinese.
Yeah. Just a drop in the bucket.
Right. So that happens even here, and especially once we leave.
Yeah.
Once we leave the city and go somewhere smaller. But, like, it's nothing to get, like, offended over. Like, we don't get offended. You can't.
No, it's
possibly.
Just with it, little kids.
Oh, for adults.
For adults, it's easier to walk away or say no or to be more assertive.
Uh-huh.
Where kids, I mean, let's remind me to come back to this in a minute.
Okay, yeah.
Because I want to talk about China first, and I'd like to compare it to the United States, because an opposite thing going on.
Let's do
anyway.
It.
So, but in China, like, my kids are, you know, they're cute and they're blonde, yeah. You know, and other people think that, not just me, so, they get picked up, they get touched, they get photos with, you know, mothers will come up with their own child and be like, hey, let's take a picture with my kid, you know. Yeah. And my children do have, like I mentioned before, have the advantage of being able to say in Chinese, you know, no, I don't want you to take my picture, or no, I don't want to talk to you, or no, you know what I mean, my kids. But because they're children, sometimes they don't do that, because they're kids, they don't want to say no to an adult.
Oh, yeah.
But they can, which I've seen I know other families that live in China whose kids are not Chinese speakers, who do have an even worse time sometimes, because their kids can't. Verbally explain that they're uncomfortable, or verbally say, yeah, you know, yeah. I don't want to do that.
Right.
So traveling in China outside of major cities, usually, you know, we have to, if we're in a train station or an airport, somewhere that's a large public space with people from all over the place, or all over China, in one, you know, gathering,
yeah.
You get a lot of photos, a lot of people coming up to you, talking to you, a lot of people wanting to touch the blonde hair, touch the kids, hold the kids, take a picture with the kids. It gets tiring, but it's not mean-spirited, and it's not, I mean, I don't take it as racist. It's just kind of curiosity, yeah, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's, you know. And the Chinese do love kids. I mean, that's part of their culture. I mean, they do seem to like little kids. I mean,
definitely.
You have, you know, the gnarliest, you know, guy on the side of the road smoking a cigarette that will stop and tell you how cute your kids are. I mean, like, you know, like the guy you're like, oh.
Right.
You know,
right.
He looks kind of rough, you know. And he'll stop and be nice to your kids, because that's just part of their culture. They like kids, you know.
Yeah, it's cool. It's
so
even though I don't have kids, it's kind of cool to see them able to be kids. Like,
yeah.
Even we were eating dinner the other night at a restaurant, and there were a ton of kids running around
being crazy.
And we were even brought up, like, damn, if we were in the States right now, like, we'd be getting yelled at or kicked out. And
that,
like,
that's,
there, it's fine.
Yeah,
it's
that's totally the... Fine. I mean, that's what I wanted to mention about a comparison to the United States. Unfortunately, when we travel in the United States, there's much more of the... stranger danger thing going on.
Oh, that whole thing.
Here, not that it doesn't happen in China, it's just not as a big a fear for us here. I mean, everybody's watching. My neighbors all know me and my kids, and, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, the communities here do seem like
the communities
really cool.
Are pretty strong here.
Very. Very. There's a park across from our apartment where the old people get together, like, every night and dance, and there's always music and singing, and it's really cool to see the strong community connections here that you just don't have so much anymore in the States, at least where I live.
Yeah.
That's a bygone era kind of thing.
I think it is, and it might exist in pockets. Small towns here and there in the U.S.
Yeah, like, I cannot generalize a whole country of 300
million
people.
No, I think we're just more of a... the transient nature of culture in the United... of people in the United States affects those parts of the culture, I think. That people can just pick up and change their jobs and move cities and things, you know, much more so than people in other countries do or can.
Right.
Yeah.
Although China, of course, is having this giant migration.
The giant migration, yeah.
Yeah.
But even that still, you know, they're all doing that for their kids. They're all doing that for the families, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear stories where the mom will go back to like her hometown and work, and like the grandparents will raise the kid.
Yeah.
They really put in a lot of trouble to make sure their kids have every opportunity possible. So
I have a neighbor who is he has the situation where his children live with the grandparents Monday through Friday and only live with him and his wife on the weekends.
Oh yeah.
To give them, because they live out not far from Beijing, but a couple hours drive.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not too bad.
Not too bad.
But yeah. So some of these people, it's easy to forget how many people are not from Beijing until like Chinese New Year happens.
And the city's and, like, empty.
Yeah. Those who don't know, like Chinese New Year is the biggest holiday in China. Yeah. And it lasts, well, the whole thing lasts like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But pretty much everyone in the country who is able to get off of work gets off for like a long weekend at least,
and a lot of people just quit
or that. Yeah. So the big thing is to go to your hometown, and mm-hmm. it might not even be where you were born, it's like your ancestral hometown, mm-hmm. Where your distant relatives are, and that just happens to not really be Beijing or Shanghai for many people. Very mm-hmm. few people have ties in these cities going back more than a couple generations.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, walking around Beijing, like once we got back from North Korea, which is the actual New Year, a couple days later we were walking around Beijing and it's just empty. It's mm-hmm. like it's hard to find a restaurant, even mm-hmm. it's hard to find food. The mm-hmm. shops are all closed.
Kind of like it.
Yeah, like it was. It was nice for a few days, to be honest. Yeah, and then the Lantern Holiday happened,
and it's just like.
And that's like the last day of the New Year, of the celebrations. So pretty much everyone was back at yeah. their normal routine. But they go out with a bang, like literally they just...
The fireworks everywhere, yeah.
I've never seen fireworks in that quantity. We could sit here in this patio and just across the whole city.
Believe it or not, they used to be more.
There used to be more?
They've made... Because they've made regulations about the selling of fireworks and the firing of and the setting off of fireworks inside the city. So out in the suburbs where I live, it used to be like World War III out there, and now it's just, you know, it's more 4th of July-ish kind of level of fireworks. You know,
so not quite
still a lot, but
yeah.
you know, not the craziness that it used to be.
Huh. Yeah. Well, that's too bad. I missed those old times because I really like that one night, but I wouldn't want that to be like all the time.
You wouldn't want that to be for like 8 days, like
yeah,
like it was right. when we first got here.
Right, like not able to sleep at all. I mean, it is not like, I think Chinese New Year is probably something you got to experience.
I wish that people could let everyone could experience it at least once, you know.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you got to do it once in your life.
Yeah.
That said, I haven't actually been here during the actual New Year yet.
So you always leave?
Yeah. Last year.
Have you been to a temple fair during New Year?
No.
That is definitely an experience. That's also an experience you should do.
Okay.
It is a hassle. There are a gajillion people there, but it is definitely something you should do before you leave China.
Okay. Can you do that in Beijing?
Yeah. There's several. The Lama Temple does one. Temple of Heaven does one. There's another place a little bit outside of China that does one. A little bit outside of Beijing that does one.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm about a 15-minute walk from the Lama Temple, so...
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, it's the traditional thing to do at New Year's, you know?
What do you do? Like,
it's like a fair back home. There's games, there's dancing, there's, you know, performers, there's street food, there's, you know, but it's, you know, centered around Buddhism as opposed to, you know, agriculture like it would be in the States, you know. Yeah.
Do you have like meat on a stick at least?
Yeah.
That's really popular.
And dragon dancing and the you know, acrobats and that kind of stuff.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. But there's a lot of people.
yeah.
And there's, you know, the carnival games, the, you know, try to hit something with a ball kind of game, you know what I mean? Throw darts at a balloon or some kind of thing like that. Yeah.
Man, that doesn't sound very Buddhist. Killing balloons.
Well, it's not an animal. They're not living.
Yeah, right. So. it sounds like fun. I'll have to check it out. We're actually running pretty low on time. We've done close to an hour, believe it or not.
It just flew by.
Yeah, it goes by fast. Yes, we should wrap it up, and we could. You're welcome to come back on anytime. You
sure.
Want to bring your wife. You want to talk about your stories of Haiti.
Haiti's an hour by itself.
North Korea's an hour too. At least.
Yes, yes.
Yes. So we just kind of scratched the surface of it, but there's a lot of. You've been to so many cool places that I'd love to hear your stories.
I like traveling. And it's one of those to go first full circle in our conversation, it was, you know, I like traveling and I want my kids to like traveling, and so I do it, you know, with the kids.
Yeah, you make it happen, which is a totally honorable thing to do. I really respect that.
Yeah. Plan more, go slower. That's really the key.
There you go, folks. Plan more, go slower, then you can travel with kids.
Yeah.
Anywhere in the world.
Yes.
Even North Korea.
No problem. Lake Baikal, Russia. That's one of my favorite places that we took the kids so far.
Oh, wow. Well, we'll save it for next time.
Save it for next time. Sorry.
Lake Baikal.
Leave a teaser for your listeners.
Yes. Coming up next time, folks. Lake Baikal. Actually, just before we wrap it up, I did one of these podcasts with a guy who, he was just traveling through Lake Baikal with his wife, and he had a drone. Mm-hmm. A giant drone, and he was flying it over the lake.
Oh, that's awesome.
And yeah, getting some really good footage. And it has this GPS function where once the battery gets low, it's supposed to come back to its owner. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, it turned around and went the other direction.
Mm.
And he just watched it slowly.
He lost it. Oh, no.
Slowly go into the lake and sink to the bottom of Lake Baikal.
It's gone.
Yeah, that's a deep one.
Goodness gracious.
Titanic is probably shallower in that shallower water right now.
That'd be some good photos. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, if anyone wants to recover it.
I'm sure there's some divers that are willing to brave it.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be cool to see. But anyway, Cade, thanks for coming on. And
thanks for having me. I enjoy talking to you. You're also an interesting, well-traveled person.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. Easy to talk to.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information, you can visit my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. From there, you can sign up to get updates from this podcast delivered directly to your inbox. Remember, the Around the World podcast is all about meeting ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. Thanks for listening.